Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde by Robert Louis Stevenson. The type of work is a psychological thriller set in London, England in the 19th century. The principal characters are Dr. Jekyll, a noble and prominent London physician, Mr. Hyde, his fiendish alter ego, Mr. Utterson, Jekyll's lawyer and close friend, and Dr. Lanyon, Jekyll's professional associate. Ironically, Robert Louis Stevenson, in his last years, disparaged the revision of Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde that was finally published in 1886, after his wife complained that the first version did not contain enough moral message. That lost first writing may indeed have drawn an even deeper and more authentic psychological portrait than the thriller, which has become by far Stevenson's best-known work. But today, more than a century after their conception, Jekyll and Hyde seem almost eerily prophetic. When Jekyll notes in his journal that his bad nature flourished not in spite of, but precisely because of his efforts to repress it, when he contends that man will ultimately be known for a mere polity of multifarious, incongruous, and independent denizens, he presages our concerns with both multiple personalities and the depth of self that modern psychologists talk about. Jekyll and Hyde remains a classic, an ageless portrait of a tormented human soul. Mr. Utterson, a highly respected attorney, was strolling with his friend Mr. Enfield through the dark, misty streets of London. They were discussing an incident that had horrified Enfield. He had witnessed the brutal trampling of an 8-year-old girl by a mysterious little man who then left her screaming on the ground. Enfield, along with members of the girl's family, had chased the attacker and demanded that he make reparations. The villain led them to a decrepit cellar door in an otherwise blank brick facade and turned over to the parents a note for £90, which was signed by Dr. Jekyll, an eminent physician. The only thing that Enfield could report about this damned juggernaut after describing his general air of deformity was his name. It was a man of the name of Hyde. Utterson was singularly disturbed. His client and friend, the very Dr. Jekyll who signed Mr. Hyde's note, had entrusted Utterson with his will. And in this will, Jekyll had bequeathed his entire estate to a certain Edward Hyde in the event that he, Jekyll, should disappear for a period of 3 months. Utterson could not understand why a man of such stature and prominence would associate with a man of such terrible disposition. Was it blackmail? At first I thought it was madness, Utterson mused. Now I begin to fear it is disgrace. Seeking to delve further into this mystery, the lawyer called on Dr. Lanyon, one of Jekyll's longtime professional associates. Lanyon had little information. Dr. Jekyll, he explained, had embarked years earlier on a series of chemical experiments that had distanced him from the rest of the medical community. Utterson was intrigued by now with this forbidding stranger. If he be Mr. Hyde, he resolved, I shall be Mr. Seek. And one night, hiding near the door of Jekyll's residence, Utterson heard footsteps. As a smallish man locked the door, Utterson stepped forward, introduced himself as a friend of Jekyll's, and demanded an explanation. Hyde, pale and dwarfish, gave an impression of deformity without nameable malformation. He had a displeasing smile, spoke in a husky, whispering, and somewhat broken voice. He seemed hardly human. The two men stared icily at one another. Then, following a brief but hostile exchange, Hyde rushed back into the house and slammed the door. Utterson was now even more anxious to confront his friend, fearing that Jekyll was hiding a terrible secret. After many calls, the lawyer finally found Jekyll at home, serenely seated in his living room. You know, Utterson began, that will of yours, I never approved of it. Then he revealed his distaste for young Hyde, of whom, he said, he had learned abominable things. Jekyll simply replied that Utterson must trust him and fulfill the will as written. Utterson acquiesced. Then, to reassure the doubtful lawyer, Jekyll added, the moment I choose, I can be rid of Mr. Hyde. A month later, an old gentleman was found cruelly murdered. A maid had recognized Mr. Hyde as the culprit who, with ape-like fury, hailed down a storm of blows under which the bones were audibly shattered. The police, having found the letter addressed to Utterson in the dead man's possession, called on the lawyer to identify the body. Utterson reluctantly obliged. He recognized the dead man's mangled corpse as that of Sir Danvers Carew, a distinguished client. And he also admitted to knowing the murderer. When he took the police to Hyde's residence in the slums of Soho, however, they found the residence empty. Angered, Utterson again called on Jekyll and demanded point blank whether the pale and dejected doctor had been mad enough to hide this fellow. Jekyll sobbed that he had learned his lesson. "I swear to God, I will never set eyes on him again. I am done with him in this world." Time passed. Much to Utterson's relief, Hyde seemed to have vanished from the earth, and Jekyll's demeanor was improved. Once quite a solitary man, he now came out of seclusion to associate freely with his friends, just as he had before. But bliss was short-lived. One night, Dr. Lanyon summoned Utterson to his home. The usually robust doctor had totally changed. A death warrant etched his face. A terror of mind had apparently sent the dying Lanyon into sudden shock. In his last act, Lanyon turned over a sealed envelope to Mr. Utterson with the instructions to open it if Dr. Jekyll died or disappeared. A short time later, Utterson was visited during the night by Jekyll's frightened young servant, Poole, who insisted the lawyer follow him to his master's home. There he found that Jekyll had locked himself in his cellar laboratory many days earlier. His only subsequent communications, consisting of hoarse and desperate demands for a certain medicine, accompanied by angry notes of instruction to the pharmacist, whose concoctions he berated as impure. Poole had caught one fleeting glimpse of a masked monkey figure, however. If that was my master, why did he cry out like a rat and run from me? Fearing the worst, Poole and Utterson axed down the door, but it was too late. Hyde's body lay contorted on the floor, a vial of poison clenched in his hand, his facial muscles still twitching. Jekyll was nowhere to be found. A search of the room revealed a lengthy journal, along with a note from Jekyll asking Utterson to read both the journal and the packet from Lanyon. As Utterson read in disbelief and horror, the mystery slowly unfolded. Lanyon's note told of a letter he had received from Mr. Jekyll asking him to come to Jekyll's home, force open the desk, and remove a drawer containing several vials of chemicals. It also said that a man would come for the drawer later that night. At midnight, Hyde had appeared at Lanyon's door. When Lanyon gave him the drawer, Hyde had asked for a glass, mixed the chemicals, and challenged Lanyon to observe a new province of power. Then, after reminding Lanyon of his oath of silence as a doctor, Hyde swallowed the potion, and before the physician's gaze, was transformed into Dr. Jekyll. "My life is shaken to its roots. Sleep has left me," he wrote. "I feel that my days are numbered and that I must die." Unable to unburden himself because of his oath, Lanyon had left only the letter he had written as a testimony of these events. Utterson then turned to Jekyll's journal. His life experiences, he stated, had drawn him steadily closer to that truth by whose partial discovery I have been doomed to such a dreadful shipwreck that man is not truly one, but truly two. As a youth, he had felt no conflict between good and evil. Indeed, the worst of my faults was a certain impatient gaiety. But his imperious desire to portray himself as a lofty and dignified gentleman had led him to a widening and deepening schism between his noble, daylight, public self and the lower elements of my soul. Finally, he could no longer resist his one beloved daydream to liberate his two selves from each other. After long experimentation, he concocted a drug that controlled and shook the very fortress of identity and allowed the unjust to go his way, delivered from aspirations and remorse, while the just walked steadfastly on his upward path. Recognizing the struggle that raged within him, Jekyll had fought to repress his less developed evil personality. Each time he drank the potion, however, I felt younger, happier in body. I was conscious of a heady recklessness. I knew myself to be tenfold more wicked, sold a slave to my original evil, and the thought braced and delighted me like wine. The doctor had taken every precaution to separate the public identities of Jekyll and Hyde. He rented a room in Soho, which he frequented as Hyde, and drew up a will to ensure that if Hyde somehow took final control, he would be cared for. Over time, the urge to transform himself into the evil Hyde grew stronger and stronger. For a while, the repentant Jekyll succeeded in repressing his wicked and bold alter ego. But I began to be tortured with throes and longings, as of Hyde struggling after freedom. And at last, in an hour of moral weakness, I swallowed the transforming liquid, and Hyde's pent-up energies exploded in rage against the unfortunate Sir Danvers. I mauled the unresisting body, tasting delight from every blow, my lust of evil gratified and stimulated. Fearing capture and punishment, Hyde transported his possessions from his room in Soho to Jekyll's house, where he drank the potion's antidote. This time, Jekyll wrote, he had firmly resolved to bury the incarnation of Hyde once and for all. Devastated by the ruthless act, he sought penance and solace by returning to his former friends and associates. But his new life came to an abrupt end in the park one day, when Jekyll, even without taking the drugs, suddenly found himself transformed into Hyde. Now I was the common quarry of mankind, a known murderer. Fearing the gallows and unable to return to the lab, Hyde had penned the letter to Lanyon under the signature of Dr. Jekyll. In full view of the mortally terrified Lanyon, the potion had once again restored Hyde to his better self. But from then on, Jekyll's mind and body were captive to Mr. Hyde. Whenever Jekyll became sick or tired, Hyde gained control. The end neared as his original supply of the formula dwindled, and he tried to replenish it. But he found the essential catalytic salt no longer sparked the final chemical reaction. Locked in his laboratory, Mr. Hyde was trapped. Finally, swallowing the last dose of his formula, Dr. Jekyll made his final journal entry. Then, in his last besieged moments, helplessly overcome by Hyde, he gulped down poison and lay twitching on the floor when Poole and Utterson axed down the door. Jekyll's final journal entry read, I am finishing this statement under the last of the old powders. The doom that is closing in on us has already crushed him. I bring the life of that unhappy Jekyll to an end.